Canto 3, Chapter 21. And this morning we're going to read text 16. This is Kardama Muni speaking. Kardama Muni is speaking to the personality of Godhead. He's directly seeing him face to face. And it's a continuation of his prayers. O my Lord, you are the master and leader of all living entities. Under your direction, all conditioned souls, as if bound by rope, are constantly engaged in satisfying their desires. Following them, O embodiment of religion, I also bear oblations for you, who are eternal time. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There's three paragraphs here. In the Katha Upanishad, it is stated that the Supreme Lord is the leader of all living entities. He is their sustainer and the awarder of all their necessities and desires. No living entity is independent. All are dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the Vedic instruction is that one should enjoy life under the direction of the Supreme Leader, the Personality of Godhead. Vedic literatures like Ishopanishad direct that since everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one should not encroach upon another's property, but should enjoy one's individual allotment. The best program for every living entity is to take direction from the Supreme Lord and enjoy material or spiritual life. A paragraph. A question may be raised. And then he raises it. Since Kardama Muni was advanced in spiritual life, why did he then not ask the Lord for liberation? Why did he want to enjoy material life in spite of his personally seeing and experiencing the Supreme Lord? That is a natural question. And the answer is that not everyone is competent to be liberated from material bondage. It is everyone's duty, therefore, to enjoy according to his present position, but under the direction of the Lord, or the Vedas. The Vedas are considered to be the direct words of the Lord. The Lord gives us the opportunity to enjoy material life as we want, and at the same time, he gives directions for the modes and processes of abiding by the Vedas, so that gradually one may be elevated to liberation from material bondage. The conditioned souls who have come to this material world to fulfill their desires to lord it over material nature are bound by the laws of nature. The best course is to abide by the Vedic rules that will help one to be gradually elevated to liberation. And the final paragraph. Kardama Muni addresses the Lord as Shukla, which means, quote, the leader of religion, unquote. One who is pious should follow the rules of religion, for such rules are prescribed by the Lord himself. No one can manufacture or concoct a religion. Religion, quote, refers to the injunctions or laws of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that religion means to surrender unto him. Therefore, one should follow the Vedic regulations and surrender unto the Supreme Lord, because that is the ultimate goal of perfection in human life. Final sentence. One should live a life of piety, follow the religious rules and regulations, marry, and live peacefully for elevation to the higher status of spiritual realization. There's a lot here. First is a very broad comment. This section of the Bhagavatam, this Karva Muni, Karva Muni's meeting Devahuti, or meeting Swayambhuva Manu, the exchange between Swayambhuva Manu and Kardama, the marriage with Devahuti. It's a section that's very, very practical for ISKCON devotees today, although it's taking place at the beginning of Satya Yuga. It's like perfectly relevant, so it's worth reading it and examining it very carefully because it's very relevant. In the last sentence, it kind of shows that, or that the second paragraph shows that. What do we do? How does a nice devotee, ISKCON devotee, live our lives when our teachings are very high and our desires may not be so very high, that our qualifications may not be so very high? Practically speaking, how are we to proceed, cultivate Krishna consciousness nicely? This section is telling us. It's portraying what we should do through the position of Kardamuni, and certainly we're not qualified like Kardamuni. We can't do penances for 1/10 of our life, and then that's all we do. We don't have that qualification. And to achieve the perfection that we see, the personality Godhead, we don't have that qualification. not by any means. But even in his situation, he's likening himself. Part of it is the humility of an elevated person. Part of it is how he has been inspired. We discussed this already, that the Vatsalya rasa of parental affection towards the Supreme Lord. But he's speaking as if he's one of us. There's material nature, and there's the force of material nature impelling the conditioned soul, and like all the other conditioned souls, I too am impelled. Think of, again, the relevancy of our situation in, 2013 Hare Krishna movement in Detroit. So the modes of nature are acting, as they're acting on everybody else, they're acting on us. And what am I to do about it? Now, and we have these really high teachings. So, just take the second paragraph for first. Why didn't Kardamuni request the Supreme Lord for liberation? And then put an exclamation behind it. He was seeing the personality of Godhead face to face, and experiencing and interacting and speaking with him. He could have said, give me liberation. He said, please give me a nice wife. One whose nature is similar to my nature, and together we can fulfill our duties. Now, um, The Bhagavatam takes different positions at different times. This is one of those different times. It is everyone's duty, therefore, to enjoy according to his present position, but under the direction of the Lord or the Vedas. Now let's think back over first canto, chapter five, where Narada is visiting Vyasa, and Vyasa is feeling, "Oh, I've completed all the Vedas, and I'm feeling despondent. And I don't know why I'm feeling like that." So Narada explains, "It's because what you've done is not wrong, because the Vedas do give all these prescriptions for, if you have desires, how to fulfill them. But you've given inordinate emphasis to that. And because conditioned souls already have a tendency to strive to be enjoyers of material nature and enjoy sense gratification, all that you've done is like, here's how to do it nicely. And they'll think that's it." And that's what people think, that's it. Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, some people think, what's the verse? Nishtraigunya Bhavarjana. What's the first part of that verse? Trigunya, Vishaya, Veda. Trigunya, Vishaya, Veda. The Vedas deal mainly with these three modes of nature and how to be an enjoyer of the three modes of material nature. Nishtraigunya Bhavarjana, rise above the three modes of material nature and trying to be the enjoyer of the three modes of material nature. So that's Bhagavad Gita, and commonly that's the Bhagavatam also. But this is a section where it's authorized. You follow the distinction? Sure, you have material desires. Just do it nicely. Here's the codes of the Vedas, and follow the codes of the Vedas and do it nicely. And pious people do like that, and you do nicely, and you'll enjoy nicely, and you'll prosper nicely. And then you get an upgrade. You just keep doing it for a long time nicely, and you get a nice up, you go to the heavenly. So the Bhagavatam isn't teaching the goal is enjoy nicely and go to heaven. Bhagavad Gita isn't teaching that either. Nishtraigunya Bhavarjana. Now, okay, back to this platform that we're Hare Krishna devotees in 2013, and we recognize these goals are really, really the goal of the Bhagavatam, of enjoying with Krishna in his eternal pastimes, which is his desire. He wants the living entities to come again to him. In fact, it's stated in this canto that that's the purpose of the Lord's creation. It's why creation takes place. Is he wants to create a situation where the conditioned souls who have so many complex, strong material desires can come to that position where they can enjoy with him in the ever-blissful rasa dance. I mean, that's the language. So now, well, that's really high, and so I'm going to go for this one. It's not exactly... It's not Varnashram. It's not the take shelter of different demigods kind of varnashram. I've got my varna, I've got my ashram, I do my duties, I propitiate the various devas, and I enjoy, and then I go to the heavenly realm. It's not that kind. That's one kind. That's the kind that Vyas was feeling despondent with. This is more the Daivi Varnashram kind, where here's this devotee, Karnama, he's a Brahmin, he knows how to do the Yuga Dharma very nicely, perfectly. He's seeing the personality of Godhead, and he still has a desire. Now, I was making the distinction previously. His desire is not quite like our desire. He has Vatsalya Rasa feelings. He wants, as a son, the personality of Godhead. It's not exactly our qualification. Or, like Lord Brahma, he wants to create a universe because he's invested with the creative potency by the personality of Godhead. So he wants to create a universe. And ours is not either one of those. But those are examples for us, so we can understand how we can do our situation properly. And it's something like a brahmachari, a nice, 2013 ISKCON brahmachari, contemplating, should I remain brahmachari, should I get married? One of those kind of things. So, recognizing, well, I still have material desire. I think that this ashram would be suited for me. So it's not like that person falls off the map of Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. Where does that person fit? And that's like a larger portion of living entities who are very, very special amongst all living entities, who have come to the position of trying to perfect their lives through the elevating force of bhakti. So how to take up that position, this is us, how to take up that position in a Krishna conscious way. So back to the question, why didn't Kardama Muni ask the Lord for liberation? And he didn't have the eligibility for that, is the answer that Prabhupada is giving, which is similar to what Krishna is saying to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. You don't have the qualification to do karma sannyas. You have the qualification to do karma palatyag. Perform your prescribed duty and detach yourself from the results of those duties by offering to the Supreme. Arjuna, if you tried doing what you want to do, Krishna doesn't, I'm paraphrasing here. You leave the battlefield. It's helpful to do this sometimes with people, like they think, oh, I want to. So then you go through this mental, okay, let's supposing you did the thing you want to do. What's it going to look like? So, Arjuna, supposing you leave the battlefield. You can't perform the duty of a kshatriya, because the duty of a kshatriya is to give protection and rule, and from the persons who you're giving protection to and ruling, there's some taxation, legitimate taxation, and that's the means of your maintenance as a kshatriya. So now, there's either have a war and then rule, or don't have a war, which is your idea, and then you stop being a kshatriya. But it's not your qualification to stop being a kshatriya. You'll go to you leave the battlefield, and you'll go to the forest, and you'll be thinking, that rascal Duryodhana. Your chivalrous spirit will be, because that's your nature. You don't have the qualification for karma sannyas. You need the karma palatyag. You need to perform your prescribed duty. That's your adhikar. And for us, largely ISKCON members, it's not our qualification to just, go to the top floor and get off. enter Krishna Loka and enjoy in our spiritual forms, in our spiritual rasa with Krishna. We don't have that qualification. That's the goal. But presently, that's not. So what do we do presently? We know what the goal is, and we move towards the goal with the capacity that we presently have. That's what we do. So again, Prabhupada's writing, it is everyone's duty, therefore, to enjoy. According to his present position, but under the direction of the Lord of the Vedas. This is Daivi Varnashram. The Vedas are considered to be the direct words of the Lord. The Lord gives us the opportunity to enjoy material life as we want. At the same time, he gives directions for the modes and processes for abiding by the Vedas, so gradually one may be elevated to liberation from material bondage. So this is a step above what Vyas was despondent about. Meaning, most persons think, the purpose of the Vedas is enjoy. And then heavenly planets, enjoy more. Most persons think the purpose of religion is that and nothing more. Exactly what, I'm just restating what Krishna says in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita. And it's true. Most people think that way. I've experimented and asked assemblies of people. Yes, that's the purpose of religion. And then some may be thinking, well, actually it's liberation. But then their concept of liberation is very unusual. Some it's just Sayuja Mukti, that's liberation. Some it's speaking now specifically about a wide swath of the Christian group, is salvation or liberation is do what we do today with our family members in a nice place where it's like eternal. You don't have to pay taxes and that there's no, things are eternal. Nice. Without the problems. That's salvation. Just do your religious thing here nicely, and that's the fruit. Say you believe in a certain set of things and try to follow those certain set of things, and of course, that's not the liberation that's being referred to here. It's, being free from the bondage of attraction from material desire. The free bondage from karma and guna and time. Where, it's in the realm of the eternal. So, while that may be the ultimate position, I'm not in that position, therefore I have to be governed by the principles of Varnashram, and they're given by God. Now, I was having, for your interest maybe, I was having a discussion. I started a discussion with two of my fellow GBC members. One is Shivaram Maharaj, another is Badri Narayan Prabhu, and we had it like a conference call that I requested. Because I knew what Shivaram Maharaj's position was, if I didn't know exactly why he thought the way that he thought. The question that I wanted some discussion about was, what is the position of Varnashram within ISKCON, because we're a transcendental movement and devotional service is beyond the regulations of Varnashram, although to some degree we deploy them. Here's a sannyas, there's a grihastha, There's brahmacharya. These are varnashram principles, like Bhakti Siddhanta. Demonstrated that he was qualified. This is a good example. He demonstrated that he was qualified to function beyond varnashram. His vow to chant whatever it was, 3 billion names. It's just like all day long for several years. He just chanted. He didn't need to do anything. We couldn't do that. You know, 3 times 64 rounds every day for a bunch of years. Who could do that? We don't have the qualification. He demonstrated he had the qualification, but then under the order of Bhaktivinod Thakur and Gaurkishor Das Babaji, preach. So he took sannyas, which means he placed himself within the varnashram system. So this is within the varnashram system. And yet we're engaged in devotional service, which isn't encumbered by the rules and regulations. So I wanted to have a discussion about this. What's the role for a transcendental process? And Shiva Maharaj very strongly, firmly, convinced. I'm not sure I completely agree. I mean, maybe I just don't completely understand his position. But his point is, our devotees, and I'll even speak for myself, I can say, I'm not on this perfected platform. And so, what do you do? You need some regulation to lift you to that position. What's that? It's varnashram. Or, what's the social structure that allows people in different positions to function together properly? It's varnashram. That's the one that God gave. You can try to, come up with something else, but that's the one that God gave. And so we need to apply these principles within ISKCON until we have that qualification. It's something like what's being said here. It's not, here's a license for enjoyment. It's when desires are there and the position is there, where even in contact with bhakti, in this case, in contact with the personality of Godhead face to face, let me be governed by the codes of Dharma when there's still a desire. Like that. The conditioned souls who have come to the material world to fulfill their desires, to lord it over material nature, are bound by the laws of nature. The best course is to abide by the Vedic rules that will help one to be gradually elevated to liberation. So it's a little bit like being realistic of our situation, self-honesty. Here's where I am, or here's where we are. And then abiding by principles that govern those who are in a similar situation, given by God. One of the important things, certainly, in the Bhagavatam message, is to be clear what the goal is. So while I'm doing this, it's not like that's it. It's to help me get to the goal. So like this question yesterday about striving. The striving for the goal, the means to get to the goal, not just the means, is the end in itself. Now I have license, like a liquor license or something. now I'm 18, so I have a license, I can buy liquor and smoke cigarettes. And so it's not like a license, that kind of thing. It's regulation. Let's go the other side. Prabhupada, when he says, when there's regulation of something, what does it mean? It's actually not good for you. But when people can't do without that which is not good for them, then it's regulated by the government or by some law. So these laws are to regulate that which is not wholesome. But we abide by the regulations because with the view that it's meant to take us to a higher position, being freed from these behaviors, to the position of transcendence. It's clear. And then the third paragraph naturally follows, logically, from the second one. So who is it that we're following? That the Prabhupada remarks, Kardamuni addresses the Lord as Shukla, which means the leader of religion. So you follow the leader. If you're going to follow Dharma, you follow the leader of Dharma. Who's that? Personality of Godhead. Because from him comes Dharma. Dharmam hi sakshat bhagavat pranitam. That the prohibition, don't manufacture religion. And then go back up. What's the essence of religion? Surrender unto him. So even if you're doing the varnashram thing, it's surrender unto him. The abandon all varieties of Dharma doesn't mean don't follow anything, just surrender. If one is an uttama adhikari, one can do that. One can be totally neglectful of convention, even, you know, dharmic convention. And there's no wrong in that, other than it's Krishna's recommendation to Arjuna, is if you have such a qualification, then teach by example because common people will follow. We can't do what Lord Rishabhdev did, and we're not qualified to be an avaduta. We just completely, at a certain point, completely was negligent of external formality. He literally became an avaduta, and we don't have that qualification. So this is our qualification within this system. Therefore, one should follow the Vedic regulations and surrender unto the Supreme Lord, not one or the other, because that is the ultimate goal of perfection in human life. So it leads to that stage where liberation. So one more time. Bhakti is engaged in from the platform of liberation. Yes? What's the verse in Bhagavad Gita that says that? Brahma bhuyaya kalpate mam chayo vyabhicharina bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samutityai tan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One rises above the modes of nature and at once achieves this position of transcendence just by being engaged in bhakti, which means that bhakti itself is transcendental. But later on in this canto, there's the question by Devahuti to her son, devotional service is transcendental. Is it possible that someone who is within the modes of nature can engage in devotional service, and devotional service becomes tainted by the modes of nature? And the answer is yes. Devotional service in ignorance, then passion, then goodness, then transcendence. Two other points, and I'm done. Go back to the first paragraph of the purport. Prabhupada is quoting two references, Katha Upanishad and Isha Upanishad. The Katha Upanishad reference is there is a Supreme who is maintaining all others. Does anybody know that verse? Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yo Vididati Kaman. There's one who is maintaining the many. So their necessities and their desires. The reality is we're dependent. We're not independent. We have desires. How can those desires be fulfilled? The reality is we're dependent. Where does the dependent go? To the one who they're dependent upon. That's the Vedic process. And an atheist doesn't do that, although they're also dependent. So they're the in denial type of people. And therefore they do unregulated things or forbidden things because they're not connecting themselves or binding themselves to the codes of Dharma. So they have to suffer unnecessarily. They don't have to suffer like that, but they're suffering unnecessarily for want of being properly regulated under the codes of the Vedas. And then the second reference is Isha Upanishad, where one is entitled to the supply of their necessities and not that of those of others' supply of necessities. What's that verse? Say it loud. Good. One should not encroach upon another's property, but one should enjoy one's individual allotment. The best program for every living entity is to take direction from the Supreme Lord and enjoy material or spiritual life. Question mark. I mean, enjoying material life is not enjoyment. So we regulate that tendency so that at least we're under the codes of the Vedas, we're regulated by God, we're accepting the real position that is our nature, while helping us thereby to take shelter, fully surrendering unto the personality of Godhead. So one last point is there are several ways in which kardama is addressing. You know this from Bhagavad Gita, the different ways in which Arjuna addresses Krishna. Prabhupada spends time with that. Sometimes Keshava, sometimes Achyuta, sometimes different names, Rishikesha. So here, same. Kardama is one place just saying, "Oh my Lord, Adisha, Isha, oh Supreme Lord." Another is the embodiment of religion, Shukla. But now there's another, the force of eternal time, Animeshaya. I'm going to spend a little bit of time with that. Because of Shikshastakam verses, where we know what this word Nimesha means. Yugayatam Nimeshena. So what is Nimesha? Just a fraction of a moment. And a moment is very small. And a fraction of a moment where Lord Chaitanya is saying, feeling your absence for a fraction of a moment seems like 10,000 years or more. The intensity of love and separation from the Lord when one is attached to the Lord. So, Nimesha indicates, in a broad sense, it's a fraction of a moment. Then, he's Animesha, or Animeshaya, so unto one who is, he's the embodiment of eternal time. There's no divisions of time in the spiritual world because time is eternal. You got that one? Okay. So now I'm going to read just a few verses from Canto 3, Chapter 11. Interesting chapter. the text 7, the word nimesha is provided. Where is it? The text 7. The duration of time of three lovers equals one nimesha. The combination of three nimeshas makes one kshana, and five kshanas combined together make one kata, and 15 katas makes one lagu. 15 lagus makes one nadika, which is also called a danda. Two dandas makes one muhurta, like Brahma muhurta. And six or seven dandas makes one fourth of a day or night, according to human calculation. So then there's this, in text 14, there's this fantastic chart. One will go down. One danda is 30 minutes. The one below that is one lagu, it's 2 minutes. And below that is one kashta, that's 8 seconds. One kshana is 8/5, 1 3/5 second. One nimesha is less than a second, 8/15. Little, slightly more than half a second. A lava is less than that, and then a veda is less than that, and at one truti is the smallest unit of time. Its smallest unit of time is the time it takes for the sun to cross one atom. Wow. And then it defines an atom. An atom is the smallest, you know, put in simple language, it's the smallest division of matter. You can't divide it smaller, whatever that is. So we use the word atom in, you know, our English language because modern science uses the word atom. So at least within modern science, atoms have parts. So that's further divisible. Proton and neutron and this and that. And so whatever, so that's their modern language. But whatever is the smallest divisible part of matter, you can't divide it further. That's when the sun crosses that, the amount of time it takes is the smallest unit of time. And so many of those makes, and so many of those, and so many of those, and just keeps going up and up and up. It's just, this is chapter 11, first few verses, canto 3. The material manifestation's ultimate particle, which is indivisible and not formed into a body, is called the atom. It exists always as an indivisible identity even after the dissolution of all forms. So in Pradhan, it's a bunch of atoms. And then when the elements separate out, there are some atoms of this kind, some atoms of that kind, and then Brahma puts them together, somebody of this and somebody of that, and you get, you know, a form. And then it breaks down again, and then it goes back, but it's indivisible units of matter. The material body is but a combination of such atoms, but it is misunderstood by the common man. Atoms are the ultimate state of the manifest universe. When they stay in their own forms without forming different bodies, they are called the unlimited oneness. And some people, by the way, it's weird, but you know, their idea is to merge with that unlimited oneness in the sense of not a spiritual conception, but just, you know, go back to the elements. Because if your conception is all there is matter, and you're frustrated, like, just merge with the unlimited oneness of matter. Phew. Pretty sad. There are certainly different bodies in physical forms, but the atoms themselves form the complete manifestation. Anyway, so then here comes time. So there's matter, and there's time. Then there's the living entity. Then there's God, and there's karma. There's five topics. So what's this time? So this is a little description in Third Canto, Chapter 11, of time. And the Lord is animesha. He's timeless. He's the abode of timelessness. And from him comes time. So that we can have the fulfillment of desires. Oh, my Lord, who are timeless, we're dependent upon you for the time, energy, element, in order to fulfill our desires. We're dependent on you. Karma Muni is a very learned person. Very, very, very elevated person. And the rest of how this unfolds, like the whole section, is very instructive. Same point as the very beginning point. It's very instructive how to carry out our duties, particularly for householders, how to carry out the duties of household life in the proper conception. How do we see the Lord? How do we see our desires? How do we see the regulations governing our lives? How do we see time? How do we see matter? How do you do it properly? Then there's the theory or philosophy, and then there's the example of one who's doing it. It's very, very wonderful. Bhagavatam. Any comments or questions? Yes?
Thank you so much. Thank you for the class. Maharaj, I have a question. Very pointed. At every point, our goal should be towards joining Lord Sri Krishna in his Raja Kinga. However, most of the time, the goal or the conception that as in the mind is to get relief from the problems which are there. So, even the intelligence may say that the goal is to achieve love of Godhead, but the desire which comes in the mind is that I want to be free from the problems. How do you consciously make the desire to have a love of Godhead and then just be relieved from the problems?
I can say it really simply, and that is focusing upon desiring to be relieved of problems is the problem. It doesn't result in the relief of the problem. It's another way of saying the same thing is, you know the story, it's one of these generic stories. One lady was her occupation was carrying. She would go to the forest in the morning and gather wood that had fallen to the ground. She'd put tie up a rope and carry them on her head and bring it to the marketplace. And that's she gets something, and that was her maintenance. So one day the bundle fell off her head, and she called out God's name. Oh, Narayan! So Narayan came and said, "Can I help you? Can you put the bundle back on my head?" So desiring to be relieved of problems is the problem. That's not the problem. The problem is our forgetfulness of our relationship with Krishna. That's the problem. So in this world, we can live doing our service to Krishna happily. And in the course of doing our service to Krishna, we may encounter this. you know, favorable, unfavorable, the good fortune, ill fortune, the problems, and you know the like your question the other day, things are going really nicely. It's not like we just need things to go very nicely, because the place in which we are is a place of duality. Today's nicely is tomorrow's problem. Now, and yesterday's problem is today's nicely. So it's not just, you know, make everything nice. It's that we're in the material world because of our forgetfulness of our position as servants. So now just change the paradigm, and here I am in the material world, and here comes a problem. So this is a nice opportunity to serve Krishna. Here's another situation where things are going very nicely. Here's a nice opportunity to serve Krishna. And that's the solution to the problem, is taking the position of being servant, which is who we are. But we forgot who we are. We want to be the enjoyers, and that therefore now there's an obstacle to my being the enjoyer. Not removing those obstacles, then I become the enjoyer. It's illusory. The self-conception is illusory. It's not who I am. Anything else? Yes?
It's not directly related, but somewhat related. One of our teaching is, which we have taught, is instead of renouncing, see everything as part of Krishna. So, because you cannot renounce anything anyway, it doesn't belong to you. You see it connected to Krishna, especially for householders, you see it that way.
Yes.
But at the same time, in Bhagavatam, I see that there is so much stress on the physical renunciation. At one age, one should renounce. Sannyasi is still considered higher than others because of the physical renouncement. So when I see that stress, I see that.
So what's your question?
So then I feel that so Bhagavatam is really saying that you actually leave, at one point you leave actually everything. So is that right? Then how about that conception of including everything then? And seeing part of Krishna. So why is Bhagavatam doing it then? If it is everything is part of Krishna and we should see everything that way, why is Bhagavatam saying to leave home at 50 and...
Well, I think you know the answer, but I'll say it because you're asking. It's directly relevant to this subject. You know, particularly, you know, the emphasis that I was pointing out in the second paragraph, and what our duty is. There are stages. So even within the Varnashram system, where seeing everything in relation to Krishna and utilizing things in relation to Krishna according to the codes of the Vedas, let my life be regulated by that to go to Krishna, and surrender to Him. In that Varnashram system, there is an arrangement for nivritti, decreasing one's involvement in material affairs, built within the system. So it's still the Varnashram or the Daivi Varnashram system, and Kardamuni followed that, didn't he? When Kapila Dev was old enough, he left. Now that's a puzzle in itself, which is different than our situation because his son was the personality of Godhead. So you know, where's he going to do what? Meditate on the personality of Godhead. That's his son. It's right there, his home. So that's a little puzzling. But that's not your question. Your question is, and the answer to the puzzle, he was setting an example. He was teaching by example. For persons that don't understand all of what he was qualified to understand. Ordinary people see, okay, he's going to stay at home, so I can stay at home too. So, but let me get back to your question, which is the essence of it is everything is, I'll say it back to make sure that I've understood or that you've understood that I've understood. One part of our teaching is everything comes from Krishna. So if we act in that way, that everything comes from Krishna, that's the position of liberation. Just act in relation to Krishna. Just act in seeing everything in relation to Krishna. Then it seems like there's this contradictory thing that says, and at a certain stage, give it all up. Now why do you give it all up if it's in relation to Krishna and that's the position of liberation? That's your question. It's if one is on the if one has the qualifications, it's the same statement as I mentioned before with Arjuna. Arjuna, you don't have the qualification, the adhikar, for karma sannyas, but someone that has, then they can do that. But in this case, this is not like the renouncing of things that are of this world is for persons who have a tendency to see them as regulated enjoyment opportunities, like family life. A regulated enjoyment opportunity. But it's actually meant to take one beyond the position of regulated enjoyment to further renunciation. Just, you know, in relation to Krishna, only enjoyment. But the philosophy is everything in fact has come from Krishna. That's the philosophy, and my spirit is, well, I want to be the enjoyer of some of it. So then regulate that, and then let go of that. Now, so if someone can become fully capable of seeing everything in relation to Krishna and in living their life that way fully, then they don't need the renunciation at the age of 50, etc. But they will do so for the purpose of setting an example for others that don't have that realization. That was the argument that Krishna was giving to Arjuna. Arjuna's argument was, you know, let me leave the battlefield. And Krishna's saying, I don't have the qualification. You don't have the qualification. Well, what if I become then perfect? Then I can leave. He said, no, then you'll also stay. Because you'll teach by example. Perform your prescribed duty. So there's different levels. That's the answer. There's different levels. If one can function with full realization, factually, I don't need the regulations anymore. Such a person is then still advised, do as ordinary people will be observing your example. And for those that aren't in that position, renunciation is necessary because I don't have that realization. I need to follow the standards that will help me get there. Something else?
Maharaj, how to overcome the attachment to our own problems?
How to? By becoming attached to Krishna. And he'll take care of your problems. It's the same question as yesterday about, you know, detachment and the bhakti principle. Behind the bhakti principle, detachment follows. So here's the dilemma. That's nice, but right now I have attachment. So it's and that's inhibiting the development of bhakti because of my attachments. So how am I to get rid of my attachments if bhakti is the way to do so, and I'm unable to fully access bhakti because of my attachments? You with me? And then the answer is gradually. With faith in the process of bhakti, continue faithfully following the process of bhakti, and gradually the slackening of attachment to the temporary will follow. Which is exactly what is being said here. A little louder. Not, I don't need the name. This, what's the question?
She wrote that I'm hearing the second paragraph is to me bringing forth the principle of self-honesty and self-acceptance, where when I acknowledge my current internal status and at one level come at peace with it and not practice or hanker at the mental platform for the highest goal, rather strive with confidence and patience, understanding that the inner movement of desire is a gradual process and will move in due course with mercy when I strive with the right moves.
She got it. She's just looking for verification, is that correct?
Yeah, she
is. Yeah, sure. And just like a little editing is, the mind, rather than speculating with the mind or something like that, or fancifully imagining oneself with the mind, something that doesn't match what my real position is, that's correct. But the mind has to go somewhere. So the contemplation on the goal while I'm functioning here is important. Prabhupada gives this example of the caterpillar that becomes the butterfly in Bhagavad Gita purport. So, I'm this little Mr. Caterpillar and I'm crawling all the time and I see these butterflies flying and I'd like to fly. So, not imagining myself, okay, I'm a butterfly, I'm a caterpillar, watch me fly, but the contemplation on the goal while performing the process is important. It allows the transformation from the caterpillar to the butterfly. And there's this cocoon phase in between, but then it comes out as a butterfly. But the mind, the bringing the mind to the goal while performing the activities that are elevating and are acknowledging through self-honesty what my present position is, it while performing activities with that self-honesty in a regulated manner, I'm contemplating on the goal. Not imagining myself to be at that stage, but contemplating the goal. We're hankering for that relationship with Krishna. And in one sense, I'm in a relationship with Krishna, even I'm doing sadhana bhakti. But that's not the mature stage. I'm hankering for the mature stage. Love. Not just duty or regulation, but love. And that seed of hankering for the stage of unmixed love helps one get there. And in one sense, that's the difference between Varnashram and Daivi Varnashram, where I'm just doing regulations, and then for what purpose? The normal idea is so I can prosper and then go to heaven. or merging, become one with God. That's more the first one, and then the second one. But so if it's not those two things, what is it? That contemplation needs to be clear. The goal needs to be clear, and contemplating the goal. What's the fruit? Where's the train going when I get on? Where's it going to take me? And I'm looking forward to getting there. Yes.
This class, Maharaj, opens up a thinking that sometimes when we're, like for myself, I can say, when I was coming to US from India, some devotees whom I was talking to, they said it's going to be dangerous for you in Krishna consciousness, and they weren't with that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking about when I talk to people, if you see someone having a strong sense of wanting to do something with a strong sense of enjoyment, and you're trying to help them in their Krishna consciousness, hearing this class, a response that is coming to me is not to obstruct that, not to stand against it and say, no, that's going to be dangerous. Because it may, who knows how that soul will go through that experience.
I would edit that and say, caution, not say no. Because anywhere you are in this world of duality, not just, earth, planet, this part is better than that part, anywhere you are, there's risk. And one should be aware of the risk. The yellow flashing light should be, it's never like a green one. It's a yellow flashing light. Be very cautious. If you're going to follow this inclination that you have, be realistic about what the risks are. And if you're going to do something else, be aware what the risks are. If you're going to do with every decision, there's consequences, and be aware what the consequences are, and be prepared to accept the consequences. Yeah, and now the rest of what you said is fine. You never know. But you also can have some predictable influences that are going to be playing upon the soul that goes this way or goes that way. There's predictable influences. If you go out in the rain, if you go out in the scorching heat of the sun, there's predictable influences. If you go down this, just I'm thinking, for example, about young people that are contemplating career. Just was with somebody who was, they were thinking architecture, but now they're thinking medicine, and very good student, like really bright student. There's this lifestyle and there's that lifestyle, along with so I really enjoy science, and I'm thinking I like doing things with people and helping people. But that's in the mind. Let's put that to the side for the moment and look at what's the lifestyle, for example. And do you want a lifestyle where there's very, very little discretionary time, and you're really, you must be highly tuned into your professional responsibility, like so many hours of the day besides the hours of the day that you're in the workplace, in the hospital or the medical practice. And if that's okay, that's okay. But be realistic. So take this other. Well, you never know what the journey of the soul is going to be. You certainly know what that profession is going to be. You're strapped on. And some people like that, and that's fine. They like it. That's fine. But if they weren't prepared for that, then surprise. And other things. Like, just sharing this very quickly, but some doctors I know, you know, they said, I began medical practice with the idea that I would be able to help people. But then when I got into practice, it's like, you know, it's don't spend time with people. Just, you know, you have to see so many patients a day, and if you can't see so many patients a day, you know, the administrator is looking at how many dollars are coming into the clinic or the hospital or whatever. And don't spend time with people. You know, next, next, next. You have to do that, or, you know, we'll find another doctor. Get it, you know. So the ethic is not extending care to people. It's how many. And so that, you know, somebody I know, they got out of the hospital clinic thing and started a private practice. And then they had to become, you know, a business person along with a doctor. And they're not a business person. And so, you know, the realities have to be contemplated. If you're going to do something, if you're going to go this way, what are the pluses and minuses? And be realistic about the pluses and minuses. So I'm not just fully okay with somebody has a desire to go that direction. And just, well, you know, I'm not going to ever say anything because who knows? But yeah, there are some things that you know. So let that person, if they have a strong desire to go that direction, support them with their eyes wide open. What's on the other end? What are the pluses and minuses?
But fundamentally, what they're saying is, pravritti also can lead to realization, not just nivritti will lead. Pravritti can also give you some realization.
Yeah. But it's not the high road. The realization is predictable. Ouch! That's the realization that's predictable.
But Kadamuni is doing pravritti.
No. No. He's not doing pravritti. He's look at what he got married, and what did he do for another so many thousands of years? He's off performing austerities with his wife. No family, just austerities with his wife in the forest. That's not pravritti. Not at all. That's not what pravritti means. I do this so I can get that. That's pravritti. The purpose of dharma is a tool to get sense gratification, and it means of increased and refined sense gratification, more prosperity. That's not, he's not doing pravritti. If somebody goes that path, we should be, you know, we should. Our duty would be to help them understand this is the pluses and minuses. And then we might say, well, you know, if it's okay, you're really fixed, you know what the pluses and minuses are, and you're ready for it. And take this bead bag along with you. And a Bhagavad Gita. So there may be some progressive realization of when the ouch comes, you know, here's something that can be a shelter for you. And some people, it's like that. Some people, it's like that. You know, they're just, you know, they're determined to do progressive elevation program. Even they realize it comes with the price that I don't like. The ouch. I don't have any discretionary time. I don't have any friends. I don't have any life to myself. But I'm, you know, I'm really attached to, you know, elevation. Okay, as long as you're, so, you know, anyway, it depends on the person. I would not support this idea that just says, you know, que sera, sera. You want to do it? Go ahead. You'll get your realization through perfidy also. Hari Bol. Good luck. There's more to it than that. Transcendental knowledge is given for a reason. And the preference to nirvritti as opposed to pravritti is given. Some persons will going to choose pravritti because that's where they are. And it's not like, okay, but beware what the pluses and minuses are, and along with that, take the holy name. Or something that's something that's doable for them. I know some people, they only chant like when they're like really stressed out. And it helps them feel less stressed. So that's why they chant. It's very utilitarian. Not devotional. But that's beneficial. That's where they're at. That's what they can do. So let them take that. Is that right?
Yeah. Maybe when I said the pravritti leads to realization, what I meant is indulging in matter can also lead to realization. That's what pravritti.
Well, but that's indulging in matter is not pravritti. That's not what pravritti means. Pravritti means that's my goal. I want more and better quality. I want an upgrade. I want progressive material enjoyment. I want more involvement in matter. I'm doing this so I can get that.
But it's true that indulging in matter can give. Kardambari chose the path of indulging in matter.
Well, it's not exactly indulging in. It's being regulated by the Vedas by the regulator. Please give me shelter so that this desire which I have can be properly directed and governed. It's not exactly indulging. Indulging, not exactly. At least that's not the sense of the word indulging that I have. And for me, the word indulging has the sense of like you've maybe heard me say this story, but when I was a small boy, we moved from one town to another town, and the priest from that new town came to meet our family because we were going to start to go to his church. And he came to our home, and you know, the guests came to the home, so our parents said, would you like something to drink? Would you like water? Would you like coffee? Would you like some wine? And he said, I'd like some wine. And everyone's eyebrows went up, and one of my sisters said, is it okay? I didn't know it was okay for a priest to take wine. And his reply was, in moderation. That's indulging. That's not pravritti. That's indulging. And I was just a little boy. It was like second grade, six or 7 years old. And I thought, that's ridiculous. Indulging, you take that principle in moderation. You can, you know, in moderation I can steal, or in moderation I can be with another man's wife. In moderation. Not excessive. In moderation. And that's what happened. He got run out of town some years later because he was messing around with wives. His pastoral counseling ended up in pastoral abuse. I mean, today he'd be in jail if something like that happened. But then it was, you know, he just ran him out of town. And he was married. Anyway, so that's indulging. Not pravritti. It's indulging. Oh, so what Kardama is not, he's just he's being regulated by. which is, at least for me, the connotation is different than indulging. He's recognizing, I have this tendency, and I'm submitting this tendency to the Supreme Lord, under the codes of the Supreme Lord, how to live my life in a proper manner. I'm being regulated by him voluntarily. Different than indulging. Yes?
So would you call that action or attitude of that Christian pastor as pravritti?
No, it's sinful. It's sinful. Especially for someone of his position. It's sinful. Besides, you know, what he was doing, and he's setting an example. And he, you know, openly. Just do whatever in moderation, and it's okay. Go rob a bank. Or don't rob a bank, just like steal cucumbers. A little stealing is okay. In moderation. Not okay. That's not pravritti, it's sinful. And for one who's supposed to be teaching, excuse my tone, but you know, for one who's supposed to be teaching standards, he's misleading. He's a nonsense. Okay. Yes.
In this process, like if you follow the footsteps of karma, how does one know that one is progressing?
You know the answer. I'll just give you the answer. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives this following very simple standard, where on the one hand and on the other hand, on the one hand, attraction for the topics of Krishna is increasing. On the other hand, the interest in involving in material activity is diminishing. Not even that the activity just is diminishing. The interest is diminishing. I don't get the same buzz from whatever that I used to do before I became involved in devotional service. Just doesn't hold the same interest for me anymore. I don't think about it. I'm not comfortable doing that stuff anymore.
If there is a piece of disinterest in probably the material things or the happier things that we used to get.
Yes. Detachment.
And there's a part of getting this enjoyment or fulfillment.
From the attachment to Krishna and detachment to matter, in short. That's a symptom that one's doing it properly, one's progressing.
And what if one finds them after some time in a status quo position that doesn't seem to be any...
Then you turn your attention to Krishna and with renewed submission to Krishna. Because that's where the forward movement comes. Pranipat. Submission to Krishna. It's late. It's 25 minutes to 9. I'm going to end. Hare Krishna. Basically.
God.